Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Chof Ted Amar Aleph. The Mishnah says, Omer Adam lechaveiro, male li kli zeh. Fill me up this utensil, aval lo b'mida. But it can't be in a measured manner. The Gemara will discuss what exactly that means. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im hayak li shel mida, if it is a utensil that's used for measurement, lo yimal ena, he can't utilize it. Ma'aseh b'Abba Shaul ben Botni, shaya mimalei midotav me'erev Yom Tov. He used to fill up his measurements on Erev Yom Tov. And then he would give them to the buyers on Yom Tov itself. Even on Chol HaMoed, he used to do this. There's a question in the Girsa here, whether there should be Mipnei Birurei Midot. The Gra takes out the Girsa. Rashi notes that there were two Girsaot here. One that had it in, one that did not have it in. That even on a weekday, he would do this because of the squeezing out of the Midot. Now, birurei midot is the foam that comes up when you pour something. The equivalent today, when you pour soda, you get that foam on top. The same thing happens when the wine heats up or when you move the wine from the barrel into the smaller utensils, there's a foam that builds on top. So that foam diminishes from the midah or the measurement that he's supposed to give to the individual. So he used to fill them up ahead of time in order to avoid that problem, because when you're selling on the spot, it's impossible to get the foam down and then to get the full midah in. But if you pour them the night before, your foam will dissipate, and then you can fill them to the top. Mitzoy mido, that's to do with shemen, that's to do with oil. At the bottom of the barrel of oil, when you're pouring it out, if you sell a certain amount, it needs to drip out. There's stuff that gets stuck at the bottom, and therefore you don't get the full amount when you're giving it to the individual who is purchasing it from you. So he used to do these in order to prevent that problem of birurei midot. And mitzoy mido, he used to do it ahead of time, so that it wasn't a problem. Now, my aval lo b'mida. Our Mishnah says that you may not measure with a mida. Am Rav Yehuda, Am Shmuel, aval lo b'kli hamyuchad mida. You can't use a measuring cup. You can't use something that is utilized normally for measurement. So a person can say, fill up this kli, as long as he's not using a utensil that has measurements associated with it, or that it itself is a fixed measurement. Aval kli ha'omeid l'mida yimalena. But a utensil that has measurements in it, but he's never used for measuring, then he can fill up. Since he's never utilized it for measuring or never using it in a way that it became for mechach or memkar, he can utilize it to fill it up. Even a kli that is designated in the future to be used for a midah when his other one breaks, still he can't use it. Almo gabi simcha yom tov Rabbi Yehuda lechumra v'rabbanan lekula. From this, you would conclude that when it comes to Simchat Yom Tov, Rabbi Yehuda is Machmir, and the Rabbanon are the Kula. Vayibcha Shemayinu. Didn't we just hear the opposite on the previous daf? The Tanan, we had a Mishnah yesterday. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shaukel Adam Basar Keneged HaKli or Keneged HaKupitz. When it comes to measuring the meat, you can weigh it against a Kli, you can weigh it against a hatchet. And the Chachamim say you can't utilize a scale whatsoever. Alma Rabbi Yehuda the Kula. So over there in that previous Mishnah with weighing of the meat, Rabbi Yehuda is the Kula. Also over here with measurements in the measuring cup or the cup to be the measurement cup, Rabbi Yehuda is Machmir and Rabbanon are Mekil. So why is it over here that we have Rabbi Yehuda being Machmir and Rabbanon the Kula? And over there, by the case of Basar, Rabbi Yehuda is the Kula and Rabbanon the Chumra. So Kasha the Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda, that's a problem, a steer in Rabbi Yehuda. Kasha the Rabbanon is also steering the Rabbanon's position. Tamar says, Rabbi Yehuda lo kasha hotom sheno omeid l'mida. That's not a problem, because over there in the case of the Basar, people don't usually measure meat in that way. They don't utilize a scale in that manner. Hochob omeid l'mida. On the other hand, over here, this measuring cup in the end will be utilized for measuring. That's the whole purpose. That's the whole reason that this cup is made in such a manner. Over there, he's doing it like he does on the weekday. Utilizing this scale is something that you do during the weekday. And even possibly when you have nothing else, maybe he would use kelim to measure it. Over here, he's not doing it like the way he did it on chol, because he hasn't put it into service yet. And therefore, he's not doing like he did on a weekday. So that is the explanation of Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel of our Mishnah, that the Chachamim permit one to use a midah, clay midah, as long as it hasn't been utilized yet for mekach u'memkar. It's only in the waiting or for the future usage, whereas Rav Yehuda does not allow it. And we distinguish this from our previous Mishnah by Basar because of the difference. Over there, the Chachamim think that that is uvdin lechol, because you're using the moznayim, and sometimes you use kelim to measure. Whereas over here, this was never utilized for mekach u'memkar, so therefore it's not a problem. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda believes over there, that's an unusual way to measure. That's not something that people do normally, and therefore it's okay. Whereas over here, it's a kli midah. Maybe not now, but in the future, it will be used in this manner, and therefore you can't utilize it on Yom Tov. Now, Rava, on the other hand, says, my aval lo b'midah. What does that mean, lo b'midah? Shlo yiskor lo shem midah. It's not allowed to mention the measurement itself. Of a kli, amiyuchad midah yimalenu. If you have a log, you can bring the log over and tell him to fill it up. You can say, please fill up this kli. What you can't say is, please give me a log. You can't measure the exact measurement. You can bring the kli that has that measurement associated with it. V'ata rebuta l'meimar kli, amiyuchad midah lo yimalenu. If it's a kli that has a measurement associated with it, even though you don't mention the measurement, it's still no good. Alma, again, the same question that we had on the shita of Rabbi Yehuda Mashmor, the lishna of Rabbi Yehuda Mashmor, which is, Gabe simchat yom tov, Rabbi Yehuda l'chumra. Over here, Rabbi Yehuda is the chumra, Rabbanon l'kula, and the Rabbanon amekio, v'ayib chashmein on the We saw their positions in opposite by the mishnah that we saw yesterday, and it's not. Rabbi Yehuda omer, shukela adam basar, k'neged ha-kli, k'neged ha-kupitz, v'chamim amein, im mashkechim b'kof maznaim kol ikar. So over there, Rabbi Yehuda's makel allows you to use the scale as long as you are using as a counterbalance a kli, because the chachamim don't allow you to use the scale whatsoever. Alma Rabbi Yehuda's the kula over there, v'chamim rabbanon l'chumra, kashu the Rabbi Yehuda ad the Rabbi Yehuda, kashu the rabbanon ad the rabbanon. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda lo kashu, Rabbi Yehuda's position's not a question, hatam b'she'enu miyuchad l'midah. Over there, that's not the way that you measure things. People don't use kelim to measure it, so it's not miyuchad l'midah. It's not a weight that is used for measurement, it's a kli, and therefore it's okay. Halcha miyuchad l'midah. Over here, you're using a kli whose sole purpose is to have that fixed measurement in it, and therefore you can't utilize it because that's uvdin d'chol. Over there, he's utilizing a scale, which is what you would normally do on a weekday. Over here, he's not doing it like he does on a weekday. Because people do drink from a measuring cup. They give you a cup, and it sings a log, and then they drink from it. So you see from there that it's not always used in mekach u'memkar. It's sometimes utilized simply to drink from. It's not only used for its measuring capacity, it's also used as a regular kli. And if that's the case, it's not mukhach that why you're buying it or what you're putting in here is mekach u'memkar. It could simply be that you're getting wine and you're going to drink it. And that's why it's permitted. Rashi adds the additional thing here. Ein darkam lomar kli ze maleli b'derech mekach. When you're going to purchase it, you don't say, fill up this kli. Ela b'derech halval matana. It's like when you're borrowing it or asking for a gift, you say, fill up this kli. But when you ask for something in a derech mekach u'memkar, you say, give me a log, give me a hin, give me a certain measurement, and then you hand him the kli that has that measurement associated with it. So therefore, in this case, it's not really derech chol, because derech chol, you would use a different language. So the change in language over here is sufficient to distinguish it in that manner. Whereas in the case of the scale itself is utensil that is used, and when you're measuring against even other items, you're still measuring it to get to a certain weight or a certain size. And therefore, it's uvdin d'chol over there, whereas over here, it's not considered uvdin d'chol. So mekach u'memkar is not determined by the utensil you use, but rather the language you use. So over here, the language you're using is not one of measurement, and therefore it's fine. And their proof is the fact that some people drink normally from their measuring cups. They use it, for instance, for Pesach. They have a specific cup that's a revi'it alog, so they know they have a revi'it for the Arabic osot. So that cup is now considered to be a measuring cup? No, he drinks from it. So it's not only a measuring cup, it's also a cup that he utilizes for drinking from. So because of that, that's not called uvdin d'chol, whereas by the scale's sole purpose is to measure and through mekach u'memkar, and therefore it may not be utilized. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, believes the scale with counterweights of kelim is not the normal way to do it, so that's not uvdin d'chol. Over here, a kli that's a measuring kli, or is problematic, even if you don't mention the measurements, because that's the defined purpose of the kli, is to measure. Remase b'abba shol ben botnit tana, af b'moed osekein, mibnei bitul beit midrash. He even did this on chol ha-moed, because he didn't want to have to leave the beit midrash. He was working, he was in business, and whatever time he spent with his business, he couldn't be learning. So in order to prevent that problem at night, when there wasn't any Beit Midrash, the people weren't learning at night necessarily, especially since they didn't have electric lighting. So at night, it was less likely they'd be learning. So what he did was at night, he pre-filled all of these items so that the next day when the buyers came in, he could sell quickly, finish up his business, and then move on to learning. Tanu Rabanan, hu kanas shalosh me'od garbe yain mi birurei midot. He was able through collecting all the missing pieces from the foam, he was able to put together 300 barrels of wine. That means that he had the foam on top, which filled the midah. That means that there was stuff left in his barrel. So he didn't want to keep that because he thought it really belonged to the buyers. So what he did was he kept it all together. And in the end, he had 300 barrels worth of this wine that was supposed to go to the buyers, but the foam took up that space and didn't take it. Now, the question is, we saw here in the Mishnah that he specifically filled them the night before in order not to have this problem. So why is it that he had this excess? So one of two possibilities, either that is after the incident here, after he realized how much was being left over by the foam, then he said, forget it, I'm filling them the night before. Or the possibility is those are only for buyers who gave them their kelim the night before. If they gave him his utensils the night before, he could fill them the night before. For buyers that came that day and had him a kli, he couldn't deal with the foam issue. And therefore, he had this excess that was left. Bechavei Rav and others, he worked in wine. He was a wine seller. Others worked in oil. Kansu, shlosh meod garbe shemim, mitzuei midot. They ended up with 300 barrels of oil from the mitzuei midot. Again, if you take from the barrel of oil, now you're filling up the customer, you take out the measurement, and then you pour into the customer's kli. But it takes time for the oil, because of its viscosity, it takes a long time for it to exit or be emptied from the measuring cup. So many times they left before that cup was emptied. So the sellers kept that excess, which really belonged to the buyer. And in the end, they came up with 300 barrels worth of oil. They brought them up to the treasurers of the Mikdash Yerushalayim to donate them there. And they weren't makdish it. Rashi says that either because you can't be makdish something that's not yours, or because it was gezel, and you can't bring gezel for public utilization, because then it'd be used for korbanot and tzibur from gezel, which is impermissible. So one of those two reasons, the gizbarim were reluctant to accept it. Amrulahem, I atem zukukim lekach. The chachamim said to them, you don't have to do this. You don't have to donate this because the buyers are mochel. The buyers know that there's foam. The buyers know that there's leftovers in the midah, but they don't have time to stick around. So they know when they purchase it, they're not going to get the full midah, either because of the foam on the top of the wine or because of the oil that doesn't get out of the measuring cup. And therefore, they are mochel because they know when they purchase it, they're not going to get a full midah. They're going to be missing that portion. And since they're mochel on it, you don't have to do this. Okay, we still don't want it. We don't feel right about it. And therefore, we want to donate it because we don't feel right keeping that which was really belonged to the buyers, even though they were mochel on it. So they were machmir on themselves not to take it. If you want to be machmir on yourself and you want to give it back, then don't give it to Hekdesh. Hekdesh, they were trying to give it to Hekdesh because Hekdesh is something that's used for the rabim in general. That's used for the public as a whole. And the gizbarim weren't willing to accept it. The chachamim in the end said, you know what, it is yours. Because the buyers were mochel on it, so it's not really an issue. But then Abishol ben Botnit and his friends said, we don't want to keep it, we want to donate it. So Chamim guided them and said, don't give it as hekdesh, but rather use it for tzorchei rabim, use it for public works. Because we have a Mishnah that tells us, the Tanya, we have a Braita that tells us, gazal, v'en yodeh lami gazal, person stole, not from one person, from a numerous people or from the rabim as a whole. If he wants to do tshuva, he obviously can't return the monies to all the people he stole from because he doesn't know who they are. So he said the best thing to do is to use them for public works, because then the public as a whole will get benefit from it. And even the people he stole from will get benefit from these public works that he does. And in that way, he'll be paying them back because he does tzorchei rabim. So that's what they said to do here also. If you want to give it away, give it as tzorchei rabim, because then the people or the buyers will get benefit from it, and then in a sense you would be giving it back to them. Again, even though technically they didn't have to do this. So my ninu, what are these public works that they suggest? Amrav Chista, barot shichim u'me'arot. These are cisterns, different types of cisterns, whether they're caves, they're built out barot or straightforward cisterns. These are water that everybody needed. So those are public works that help everybody out, and everybody's a beneficiary of that. So you should do these items in order that people benefit, whether it's for the person doing tshuva for stealing, or whether in this case they wanted to act b'nei meshurat hadin and not to keep that which belonged to the buyers, but they were mochel and left it with the sellers. Adabri Rav Chista Rabbanu Ukva. Rav Chista was leading Rabbanu Ukva v'darash. Lo yimdod adam se'urim v'iten lifnei be'emto b'yom tov. A person shouldn't measure out the barley that he's going to give to his animal on Yom Tov. Aval kodehu kavo kovayim, v'noten lifnei b'em tov. But he can take a cup that is a kavo kovayim, stick it into the pile, take it out, and give it before his v'ema, v'eno chosheish, and then he doesn't have to worry about it. Because if you measure it out, it looks like you're engaging in mekach u'memkar, so we don't want you to do that. On the other hand, you can stick the measuring cup into the pile itself and take it out. Because normally the way you do it is you take your hand, you grab the grain and put it into the measuring cup because you're measuring for selling. So that's impermissible. What you can do is take the measuring cup itself and then stick it directly into the pile and take it out, because that's not the way that you normally do it for Mekach or Memkar. And then you can just do that and take it out. Main koder, mihir means to make a hole there, so that's also not a problem. And then you can take it out and give it to your behemah, because you're not acting in a manner of Mekach or Memkar. Vanachtom. Nachtom, Rashi over here clarifies that normally in the Gemara, Nachtom means a baker. Over here, Rashi says that's not only used for baker, it means anybody who prepares food for other people. So over here, Nachtom is someone who's cooking food for other people. Modeh tavlim noten l'toch derato. He's allowed to measure the spices to make sure that he gets the right amount into his kedera, into his cooked good. Kedei shelo yakdiach tavshilo. So he doesn't ruin his tavshil. Because if he puts in the wrong amount of the spices, the salt, then he's going to ruin it. So he's allowed to measure it because that's really a tzorach ochel nefesh. Amar Rav Yirmiyah ba'ava, Amar Rav, modedet isha kemach v'yom tov v'noten l'toch isata. Woman can measure the amount of flour that she needs to use to make her bread, or on Pesach to make her matzah, kedei shetitol challah b'ayin yafa, so that she takes off challah in a generous manner. And that is because if she's just going to estimate after the fact how much flour she used, she's going to tend to estimate on the lower end. And therefore the challah that she removes, which is 1/24, is going to be much smaller than should be, or less than necessary. Again, for challah, any amount would suffice. 1/24, there's a din chachamim. So it wouldn't necessarily be a problem of not having challah removed from it, but it's a problem because the kohen's going to end up with much less. Whereas if she measures it, she'll actually know how much she's putting in, and therefore she'll give much more generously. It means she'll give the full 1/24 that she's supposed to give to the kohen. Ushmol amar asur. Shmuel says it's asur. So right now we have a machloket. Rabbi Yirmiyah ba'av amar Rav, that's Rav, versus Shmuel. Rav says mutar to be modeit. And Shmuel says, Asur. Vaha Tana de Beis Shmuel Mutar. Don't we have a Tana de Beis Shmuel that is Mutar? This phrase in the Gemara is a very, very difficult phrase. Rashi is already aware of the fact. That is because all Tanaim and all Braitot really have their origins in Eretz Yisrael. That's where the Tanaim lived. That's where the Mishnayot and Braitot existed. So have a Tana de Beis Shmuel suggests that there were Braitot or Tanaic works that were found in Shmuel's Beit Midrash. Shmuel lives in Bavel. And therefore, why would he have Tana de Beis Shmuel? So Rashi interprets it a little differently and says that Tana de Beis Shmuel is b'tosefta's sider Shmuel mi'atanaim shelefanav, that he put together a tosefta from the tanaim that were in front of him. K'moshi sidru Rav Chiya v'Rav Oshia, that way that Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia did. K'moshi sider Rabbi at the Mishnah, just like Rabbi put together the Mishnah, Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia put together the Braitot. So Shmuel put together like a Tosefta of sorts. Rav, really, according to the Gemara, was the one who put together the Tosefta, but took Tanaic works and put them together. Rashi says Tanaim Lifanav, which is interesting, whether he really means literally Tanaim Lifanav, which would be very difficult, or he means that he had works of Tanaim in front of him, and he put them together, and he organized them in such a manner that there was a Tana de Beis Shmuel. But Rashi is clearly asking or addressing the issue of how is it possible that there's a Tana de Beis Shmuel. Generally, we have something like Tana de Beis Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel is a Tano. So then you have Tana de Beis Rabbi Shmuel. Those are the Braitot that were found in the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Shmuel. Tana de Beis Rabbi Chiya. Tana de Beis Rabbi Oshia. So those are Tanaim who have works of Tanaim that are in front of them or have Braitot that they can put together. Tana de Beis Shmuel is a much harder statement in the Gemara, and that's what Rashi is trying to address over here. So here we have Tana de Beis Shmuel is agreeing mutar like Rav. So Amar Abayi, Hashtad Amar Shmuel Asur, since Shmuel said it was Asur, but Tana de Beis Shmuel mutar, and Tana de Beis Shmuel says mutar, Shmuel alocha lemase atale ashminan. Shmuel is coming to teach us the alocha lemase. So now this brings up a very difficult situation on how to paskin over here, how to deal with this. So, first of all, we have a principle in general that when you have a machloket Rav and Shmuel, then be isure, when it deals with the isure, malocha k'rab, be momo and alocha k'shmuel. Over here we're dealing with the isure, and therefore the alocha should be like Rav, because you have Rav and Shmuel, alocha k'rab, be isurim. Plus, you have Tana de Beis Shmuel that supports Rav. So that would give you a lot of reason to believe that Tana de Beis Shmuel and Rav, that it's mutar, and that should be the alocha. On the other hand, it seems from the Gemara that what the Gemara just said over here is that since Shmuel said this, he's giving you halacha lemaseh. Halacha lemaseh means that that's the way that you practice. So Tosafot says over here, what does that mean? Shmuel halacha lemaseh atel shmina perush. Diavo shum adam lishol lanu ketzad yaseh. Someone comes and asks for a psak halacha. we give him horat that it's asur. But avala now roim shum adam shnoeg heter bedavar inanu tzurchim limchot bo. We don't have to stop him. Somebody's doing this because they know that there is halacha or opinions like this. This is the equivalent of what we had yesterday, which is halacha ve'in morin kein. This is halacha, but we don't give a psak in this manner. So we rely on Rav and Tana de Beishmuel in this case, in terms of the Iker halacha. But if someone comes from a psak, we're not going to give them psak that it's mutar, because it might lead to people making the wrong conclusions about measuring on Yom Tov. And therefore, if they come and ask for a psak halacha, we're going to tell them, like Shmuel, that it's asur. So that's the way Tosafot reads the Gemara over here. And based on this, Tosafot says, Lufi zeh, lo palik Shmuel ad Rav. Shmuel and Rav are not arguing. The Tarvayu modu la asur lemaseh. That lemaseh it's asur. Because even Rav agrees that it's halacha vein morim kein. And since they both agree, therefore, we're not paskani against Rav here be surei, because we're really paskani like Rav. We're saying, underlying it is mutar. Which is halacha lemaseh. We don't give a psak like that. Which means that it's halacha vein morim kein. But Miu, as the Tosafot points out, the Bahag, Perush, Ushmuel halacha lemaseh at the Shminin, upalig abraita. He argues on the Braita, he argues on Tana Devei Shmuel, and he's arguing on Rav. He's not coming to reconcile and say halacha vein morim kein, but rather he's coming to say wrong. Rav's wrong, and the Braita is wrong. You can see that in the Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel says, Shmuel halacha lemaseh at the Shminin, ulafuke matnito hudata. He's coming to say that I disagree with the Braita, I disagree with Rav. Now, what do you do in terms of halacha? So some people paskin like Shmuel, even though halacha is like Rabbi Surei, but because the Gemara here gives a stam statement that the halacha gemasek is kishmuel, we paskin like Shmuel. There are others, on the other hand, that are posei k'rav, because halacha is k'rabbi Surei, especially in an instance over here where he has support from Tana de Shmuel. So now you have a halacha question, who do we paskin like? Do we follow the normal principles of psak, which is halacha k'rabbi Surei? Or do we say, since the Gemara said here that it's halacha lemaseh going to Shmuel, that we paskin like Shmuel? The Shulchan Aruch paskins a tough kuf vav, ein modudim, kemach v'yom tov, g'day lalush, l'kach be'omer adat. We paskin like those opinions that believe that the halacha is like Shmuel. But, omer rav rab Shmuel me'ayvro, Tosafot brings from Shmuel me'ayvro, da'afilu mandamar halacha k'rav. Even if you believe the halacha is like Rav, mikom alom asur lanu mizman hazeh limdod. Today, we don't do medida. Because the whole position of Rav is premised on the fact, why can't you measure it? Because the woman then will give more generously or in a more full amount the challah that she owes to the Kohen. But today we don't give the challah to the Kohen. We take off a piece and we burn it. Or even if we take off two pieces and we burn it. But we do a minimal amount and then we end up burning it. There's no reason to measure it in order to be more generous, because generosity is not an issue anymore. So he says today the law for sure is that you can't measure it. Even if you want to paskin like Rav that it's mutar, that's only the time when the challah goes to the Kohen. But where a challah doesn't go to the Kohen anymore, you for sure should not measure it, because there's no benefit in being generous. And therefore, you should do it b'omen adat, you should do it on a estimated basis. And he says, in addition, on Pesach, one should be careful that they don't use a measuring cup in order to measure out the flour to make the matzot on Pesach, which is interesting in and of itself. This comes to, when do they make their matzot? We always have our matzot baked before Yom Tov, and then even those that want to do a special, they go bake it on Erev Yom Tov and Zman HaPesach. But it seems from the Gemara, you see this in a number of places, this is one of them, where Tosafot is mentioning, is that they bake their matzot on Pesach itself. That a part of the experience of the Seder was actually baking the matzot, and then having those fresh matzot for the night of the Seder. And they were actually baking matzot on Yom Tov itself. And that is actually Rav Re'im HaKohen, the Rosh Hashiva Otniel, actually practices that today he still bakes the matzot on Pesach itself. Part of the reason is because what the Gemara says in Pesachim, which is that the whole mitzvah of matzah derives from its opposition to chametz. That only something that could become chametz is actually mutar to be matzah. So what he argues is that, based on that, it should be done in a zman when there's Yisur Chametz. Now, in the afternoon of Erev Pesach, there is also an Yisur Chametz, but it's a lighter form of Yisur Chametz. The real Yisur Karet, or Yisur Chametz, that is associated with Matzah, is the Yisur Chametz of Pesach. That only happens on the night of Pesach. So therefore, in order to get real Matzah, you have to do it at a time when you could make Chametz, and still make it into Matzah. And that's the true Matzah. So based on that, he believes that the Matzah should be baked on Pesach itself. And here again, you see from the Tosafot that was the practice, that they did bake matzot on Pesach itself. But, as he states here, you have to be careful not to use the regular measuring cup in order to measure the flour for the matzot. You have to do a little more, a little less, in order that you don't run afoul of this din over here. Right, Tana Rabbanan. Ein shunim kemach v'yom tov. You're not allowed to go a second time with Kemach on Yom Tov, meaning that if you've already done Harkadah, you've already sifted the flour, you're not allowed to do a repeat sifting on Yom Tov. Mishum Rabbi Pipis or Rabbi Papus, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira Amru Shonim, you're allowed to do it again. Bishavim, everybody agrees, Shinafalu Tochan Suoro Kisem, if a pebble or a piece of wood fell in there, Shishonim, that you can do it another time. Tani Tana Kameh de Ravina, Ein Shonim Kemach B'Yom Tov, you're not allowed to repeat doing the sifting of the Kemach B'Yom Tov. If a Tzor Kisem falls in there, Borer B'Yado, you're allowed to take it out by hand. Amalei Koshkein does sort. That's certainly not allowed. Amalei Kiborer. That's like absolute Borer, so you can't do that for sure. Alright, so now let's discuss a couple of the issues here. Ain't Shonim a Kemach. Why can't you sift the Kemach on Yom Tov? Rashi says, because Evshalom Etmol. You could have done it the day before. Since it's something that could be done the day before, it's not permitted for Ochel Nefesh on Yom Tov. This is Rashi the Shitato, that the whole problem is a problem of Efshar beforehand or not Efshar beforehand. So since it was Efshar beforehand, it's not Melechet Ochel Nefesh, that's Mutar on Yom Tov, and that's why it's not permitted. On the other hand, the Repapius and Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira say you're allowed to repeat the sifting process is because the Lecha Tircha. It's not really a big deal, but Devar Nirahu, and it's obvious to anybody who's watching, so Pam Shnia, that this is the second time, Vein Zekim Rakeid, Livror. It's clearly not sifting for the real sifting purposes. The main sifting was done on the first time. The second sifting just gets you a slightly finer flour, but it's not the real Harkadah, where you do it in large quantities in a commercial manner, and therefore it should be permitted because it's really not a malacha anymore. You've done the sifting, the second sifting is not really a malacha. So that's the way Rashi reads it. On the other hand, the Ran points out, that's Rashi l'shitato. But according to the others who believe that the problem here is when you do it in large quantities, then even the Tanakhama has to agree here, when you do the second Harkadah, that it's not really an issue. It's just that we do it gzeira otu. That if we allow you to do the Harkadah the second time, then people will come to do it the first time. And Rabbi Pipus or Rabbi Popus and Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira not goes there in that manner. Then the second thing that happens here is that if something falls into it, like a tzvor or a rock that falls into it, then we don't allow you to be mevareret. We don't allow you to pick the item out because that's borer. And borer is an av malacha, and that's not permitted. On the other hand, you can put it through the sifter again and have it come out. Why? Because that's not the normal way to do borer. And when you put it through the sifter, it's clear to everybody that you're putting it through the sifter, but you're not really trying to do harkadah, and you're really not trying to do borer. You're doing it in an unusual manner, and since it's an unusual manner, therefore it's permissible. So what can be it from the conclusion of this gemara is that number one is whether you can repeat harkadah, and everybody agrees that if something fell in on Yom Tov itself, since you couldn't do it beforehand, there was no way for you to deal with it beforehand, so you maybe should be able to do it, but don't do borer, because we don't want you doing borer on Yom Tov, because that's an av melacha. Whereas we do say, do the shonim, you can do the harkadah again, because that's an unusual way. First of all, the harkadah is not doing real harkadah, because it's obvious to everybody that you sifted it already when you sifted the second time, because nothing is getting stuck, you don't see a lot of the subin getting caught in the sifter. Plus, by doing it in this manner, it's a borer that's not the normal way to be mevarer, and therefore it's okay. Now, as Rashi, l'shitato, points out that over here, this wasn't Efshar Me'er of Yom Tov. So why isn't it mutar because of Ochel Nefesh? So Rashi says it's mechzeke borer. It looks like borer. It's not real borer because borer is technically allowed over here on Yom Tov for Ochel Nefesh because it wasn't Efshar Me'er of Yom Tov. But since it looks like borer, and we wouldn't always permit borer because it's prior to Lisha, therefore we don't allow you to do it. We do it through the Shinoi in Harkadah. Okay, we'll get back to that and discuss that more in depth, because it's not so clear that borer is really a problem. But let's go through the halacha, through the gemara, and then we'll come back and discuss this. So then we have Doresh Rava bar Ravuna Zutei, Hapitcha de Narda, on the entranceways to Narda, Shonim Kemach B'Yom Tov, you're allowed to do this harkadah, the sifting, a second time of Yom Tov. Amalu Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman said to whoever's with him, his Talmidim, Poku Amrulei, go out and tell him, La'abo, meaning here, it's a term of endearment, a term of respect. Shkila tuvutech, you can take your goodness, v'shadi achazrei, throw it out. Poke chazi, go out, and see, kama huta hadron min Narda. Go see how many sifters are flipped over in Narda, and they are sifting. People already know that you're allowed to do this second sifting on Yom Tov. They just do it on the back of the sifters. They do it through a shinoi, But they know already that you're allowed to sift in a differentiated manner. So that is slightly different than what we had said until now. Before, it seemed to be that you could be sifting the second time just in a regular manner. Over here, the indications are based on the girsa that we have in front of us is that you can sift the second time. You just have to do it in a slightly different way. You have to flip over this sieve or sifter so that it's doing it on the back instead of in the front of it or through the normal way. So the bitu the Rabbi Yosef nahala kimcha agava de mehuta. She went ahead and sifted the kemach on the back of the sifter, or on the back of the sieve. Amala, Rav Yosef says to his wife, Chazi da'ana riftum aliyota b'ina. I see you want to make sure that I have really good bread, and therefore, you don't have to flip it over. You can do it in a regular manner. Since this is the second time you're doing it, and you're just sifting it to make it just a little finer, but it's not the regular harkadah, you can do that in the normal manner. You don't have to flip the sifter, the sieve over in order to do it that way. She used to do it on the Gaba de Torah. Now, it's interesting. Rashi says a Gaba de Torah means that she flipped the table over. She had some sort of sifting mechanism that went with the table, and she did it on the back side of the table, because that was a shinoi. On the other hand, Tosafo believes that Agaba de Batorah, and that was the shinoi itself. The fact that she did it on the table, that normally when you sift into an ivory vase, you sift into a trough, or some item that you're going to need in. Here she sifted onto the table, which was already a shinoi because the table itself is not where you usually do the sifting to, because then the flour is there, you have to move it again to do the lisha. So whatever it is, she did some sort of shinoi. Amar Avashi, ha didan, my wife, is brate de Rami Bar Chama, is the daughter of Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama mara de uvdavo. He is a person who's very medaktik on his masim. Ve'ilav dechazia mi bein asha. If she didn't see it in my father-in-law's house, lava abda, she wouldn't have done it. So what Ravashi says about his wife is that she definitely saw this from her father, Rami Bar Chama. And since Rabbi Bar Chama was very makbid on his masim, it must be that the halacha is this way. There are alternative girsas. The Rif's girsa is actually that Rami Bar Chama was in front of Rav Papi, and Rav Papi was the one who was Marav de Uvda Havo. The Rosh has a girsa of Rav Papa, which is very difficult because Rav Papa is a Talmud of Rava, and therefore it wouldn't make sense that Rami Bar Chama was doing something in front of Rav Papa, because Rav Papa lived later than Rami Bar Chama, and it wouldn't make sense that he was doing something in front of Rav Papa. So either it's the girsa that we have in front of us, or you would add in that it was done in front of Rav Papi. So now what you have here, in conclusion, is you have Rav Yosef saying to his wife, you don't have to do a shinoi in order to sift the flour a second time. Whereas Rav Ashi is saying, thought you didn't have to, but then he saw his wife doing it and said, she must have gotten that from my father-in-law's house. If that's the case, then we are going to be makpid on that. Now, if you have a machloket Rav Yosef and Rav Ashi, you're going to paskin like Rav Ashi because he's a batro. He's a later amora. And therefore, the halacha would be like Rav Ashi, that you have to do it derech shinoi. Well, the problem is that if you go to the Rif actually quotes our Gemara, but when he quotes our Gemara, he quotes both the bitu de Rav Yosef and the bitu de Rav Ashi. He quotes the wife of Rav Yosef and the wife of Rav Ashi. So that means he's quoting both of them. And obviously, he doesn't see a stira between them. So what does that mean? So the Rosh claims that the reason the Rif brought both of them is because he believed, like Rav Yosef, which is that you don't have to do an extreme type of shinoi, like flipping over the sieve or the sifter, but you have to do a small shinoi, like doing it on the table instead of into the trough. So what Rosh says is that l'alocha, everybody agrees you need a shinoi. It's a question of how big a shinoi you need. And so Rav Yosef said to his wife, you don't need that big a shinoi. And Rav Ashi upheld the position of his wife, who said you need a little shinoi. And they both agree. Big shinoi you don't need, little shinoi you do need. And it's a difference between flipping the sifter versus doing it on the table. Even though, as the Rosh points out, the Rambam says both of those are considered to be shinoi and puts them together, the Rosh disagrees and says that's what the Rif means. On the other hand, the Ran explains it the other way. He says that the din is, Me'ikar alocha is like Rav Yosef, that you don't need a shinoi at all. But the wife of Rav Ashi was Machmir. And Rav Ashi says, well, keep that. That chumrah is a good chumrah to keep. So Me'ikar alocha, it's mutar to do even without a shinoi. On the other hand, we are machmir, like the wife of Rav Ashi, in order to do with the shinoi. So that's a chumrah. It's not ikar alocha, but it's a chumrah, and that's why the Rif brings both of their positions down. Now what's interesting is here is the Balei Tosafot. Balei Tosafot mentioned over here that our Gemara here only says you're allowed to sift for the second time. But the first time, you're not allowed to sift. On the other hand, they quote from the Rashbam, Perish da yadei shinoi ein lechalek. If you do it through a shinoi, you don't have to differentiate. If you do it with a shinoi, you can even do harkadah for the first time. You don't have to do it for the second time. Just like that we saw from the wife of Rav Yosef. Yeah, the wife of Rav Ashi, she was just machmir. But if you want to do Tchilat HaRagadah, you want to sift it for the first time, if you do a Bishino, you flip over the sifter, then you can even do it the first time, because that's enough of a Shinoi to permit it. V'yesh l'smoch alav, l'inyan l'atir l'shivcha nachrit, Tchilat HaRagadah yidei Shinoi. So Tazwar in the end says, we don't want to rely on the Rashbam to do it ourselves, but if with Tziruf of a non-Jew doing it, plus the Shinoi of flipping it over, that you can do. So even though it's technically Amir Le'akum, and they can't do something that you can't do, but here the Tziruf of the Rashbam says if you do it Derech Shinoi, it's allowed, plus the Nachri together, then we'll permit it. Aval Anu Latzmeinu Ein L'smoch. But we won't be Somech on the Rashbam to do it ourselves. The Ran points out over here that the Rashbam must have had a different girsa in the Gemara. And in the case of Narada, when Rav Nachman says to Rava Baravuna Zute, go out and see what's going on in Narada, the girsa that we have in our Gemara, which is the girsa that Rashi promotes, which is Pok Chazi Kame Mahuta Hadron Bin Narada. Go see how many sifters are flipped over in Narada. He thinks that the Rashbam's girsa was Kama Mahuta Raktan Bin Narada. How many sifters are sifting in Narada? The difference will be then whether it's done Derech Shinoi or not done on Derech Shinoi. According to Rashi's girsa, even when they were showing him, they were doing it a second time, they were doing it with a Shinoi. Because according to the Rashbam's girsa, he was telling him to go out and see how many sifters were done the regular way, which means that they were doing it the second time and they kept the sifter the regular way. To flip over the sifter, to do it with Derech Shinoi, that's if you want to be shown it. If you want to do it the first time, you have to do it that way. The second time, you don't have to do it that way. So that's what the Rashbam's conclusion is, and he thinks that's because the Rashbam had a different girsa in the Gemara. So Le'alocha in the Shulchan Aruch in Tafkuf Vav, see, Betty says, Eim raktim akemach b'tchila afila yedei shinoi. Paskins against the Rashbam and says that you can't do arkadah on a Yom Tov, even through a shinoi, because this is a melacha, first of all, that's before Lisha, and number two is it's done on commercial quantities. So as we mentioned before, that does not qualify as ochel nefesh. Might be only osur midrabanan, or according to some, it might even be osur midoraita. Like Rashi who says it's efshar merav yom tov, or according to those that think it's melechet avodah, and therefore it's osur midoraita. Avalim rakdomi edmo, if you already sifted it the previous day, v'nafal bo tzrorik yisem, and then a rock or a piece of splinter fell into it, rotzei rakdo pam shniyinit, if he wants to do it again, mutar, afalo shinoi. You can do it again, even without a shinoi, Hagah, and then the Ramah brings down, you can pick it out with your hand. And some people say you may not do it that way. Nothing fell into it. And he just wants to sift it again. You need a small shinoi. So he's passing like the Rosh, who says that you have to do a small shinoi when you do it a second time. So that's what he says here. You can do it on the Shulchan. That's a Shinoi Katzat. So in the first case, when you want to take out the Tzor, the Kisem, he says you don't have to do it with the Shinoi. Whereas the Mishnah Berurah brought for us, like the Bach and Eliyahu Rabbo, who say that even in the case where you're taking out a Kisem and Tzor, you have to do a Shinoi. The Ramah tells us that some people believe you can pick the rock out and pick the splinter out right away, not even do it through Harkadah. Says about others that are Oser. Now, that's interesting, because our Gemara said before that everybody, if you pull it out by hand, that's definitely boder, and that's problematic. So we'll have to come back and discuss that. And then, Hagah, we have another Ramah, which is, Vodin demuta lasota yedei enu yudi afilu tarchila tarkidah im yeshna ishane ketzat. So if you do a small change, and you do it through a goy, then you can do arkadat chila. You can do arkadat for the first time, like the Rashbam, according to Tosafot, which is that we don't accept the Rashbam in his Ikra Halacha, which is that in through a Shinoi you can even do Tehillat Hargadah, but with the Tziruf of a non-Jew and a Shinoi we allow it. So the Ramah brings that down Halacha based on what the Tosafot says. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Pri Chodosh, who's Machmir. The Pri Chodosh says that even with the Shinoi you shouldn't do it with the Nachri. So the Mishnah Berurah is willing to say if you do a big Shinoi, like the other side of the Rosh, which is that you do a very, very big Shinoi, plus, you know, N-O-U-D, if a Nachri do it, then he's willing to permit it of Harkadah in the beginning, because technically it was Efshar Mi Erev Yom Tov, and therefore only with a very big Shinoi and N-O-U-D, that Tziruf will allow. Now what's interesting here is the way the Ramah says over here that you're allowed to be Borer. You're allowed to be Borer and take out the rock or the pebble or the Kisem directly, even though our Gemara says just the opposite. And then the Ramah, who here permits one to take out the pebble or the splinter by hand, is based on the girsa of the Ra'ah, the Me'iri, who have a girsa that says when Ravina saw heard the Amora said that separating out the pebble by hand is problematic because of Borer. He said, no, you should do it by hand and not use a kli to do it. So he had the opposite conclusion. That's what the Ramah is quoting here, the Kula. But the Tzad Chumra is like the Girsa that we have, which is it's not permissible because, like Rashi says, it's Mechseke Borer, or it's actually Borer. And therefore, one should do it in the manner of Hakadah, which is not the normal manner of Borer, and therefore it's permissible. You can't do regular Borer on Yom Tov. The problem with that is that we already learned back on Daf Yud Gimel that Borer is permitted on Yom Tov. So why all of a sudden here are we saying that Borer is not permissible on Yom Tov? So if you actually look in the Ber Halacha on Taf Kuf Yud, the first Ber Halacha over there, he raises the issue and says, I don't understand. Why is it that over there in Daf Yud Gimel, where you're allowed to separate out the chaff from the wheat kernels that you had rolled between your fingers, that's permissible, and that Borer is permissible, and all of a sudden over here, this Borer is impermissible. And the Ber Halacha points out that there are a number of Achronim that already raised this issue, including the Taz, and the Marmar Mordechai, and the Nar Shalom, and the Graz. So he says, U'mishmeru Hasham, the Mishmeru Bura by us, in the case where you're not allowed to take out the pebble, he quotes, he says, I quoted from the Chayodom, that there is a problem here because because the normal way to do Borer for taking out a pebble is to take it out by hand. So since that's the normal way to do it, when you do it on Yom Tov, that's Derech Chol. But we allow you to do Borer on Yom Tov, you have to do it out of Kli. You have to do it not with the normal Kli that it's done with. So Borer, that's normally done with the Kli when you're talking about taking away the chaff. So there, if you do it by hand, or you do it in a Kli that's not usually designated for that, that's fine. Because that's already a Shinoi. But over here by a pebble, where the normal manner is to take it out by hand, therefore, you can't do it on Yom Tov in that way, because that is the Uvdin Dechol. The other distinction that he brings from the Shem of the Graz is that the possibility there's a difference between flour and kitniot, and that is actually borne out by the Gemara on Yud Gimel Amud Bet and Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, where there, according to Rashi, Gemara differentiates between kitniot and tefuah, and says that kitniot are done in small quantities, and therefore it's fine, whereas wheat or flour is done in large quantities, and therefore it's not permissible to be done. And that might be the difference in Borer. The Borer that we permit by Molel Melilot is only by kidney oat. The one that we say is impermissible is by flour. But the Achronim are looking for a differentiation as to why Borer in some instances is mutar and Borer is not permitted in other instances. Because, first of all, it's a malacha that's before Lisha. But we do find instances where it's allowed and find instances where it's not allowed. What we do know in the end is that Borer is allowed on Yom Tov as long as it's done in a manner that is not a commercial quantity of Borer, as well as it's not done by a kli that's normally used for it, then the Borer is permitted on Yom Tov as long as it's done in small quantities and done specifically for Ochel Nefesh on Yom Tov itself. Right now we continue with the Mishnah. Holech Adam Etzel Chaveni, Aragil Etzlo, person who go to a storekeeper we normally frequent, V'omerlo, Tein Li Beitzim, you can say, give me some eggs, Ve'gozim, or some nuts, B'minyan, and you can give him a number, Shekein Derech Balabayit, Yot Moneh, B'toch Beito. Because that's the way a person deals with these items inside of his house. He says, give me 20 eggs, give me 10 nuts. That's something that he normally does. So that is permissible. Tan Rabbanan, we have a bright Tosefta that's more expansive, which is, Halecha damitzuwe aragil etzlo, he can go to a shepherd who he normally frequents. From there, Tan Ligdi, Echad, Otele Echad, he can say, give me one goat, give me one sheep, one lamb. Etzel Tabach, aragil etzlo, he can go to a butcher, a shochet that he normally goes to. From there, Ten li kaf, give me the foreleg, or yerech achat, or give me a thigh or a hind leg. Eitzel patam. Patam is from the word lefatem. Lefatem means to fatten up. So this is a person who raises birds. You can go to a ragil, it's lov omerlo. Ten li tor, echad or gozal echad. Give me one bird, one pigeon, one dove. Eitzel nachtom ragil, it's lov. You can go to the baker. Here, nachtom's used like a baker. Omerlo, ten li kagar echad or gluska echad. Give me one loaf of bread. Give me one cake. Beitel chanveni a regular store. Go to a store. Give him a lo. Tainly a srim beitzim. Ochamishayim egozim. Give me 20 eggs. Give me 50 nuts. Asara farsikim. 10 peaches. Vachamisha rimonim. And 5 pomegranates. Vetrog echad and 1 etrog. Ubavachle eskir lo skum mida. As long as it isn't mentioned skum mida. Shemelazar omer bavachle eskir lo skum mekach. As long as it doesn't mention skum mekach. Now here there's a machloga rishonim what this means. Rashi says, as long as he doesn't mention skumida, means kavo kobayim. You can't mention a measurement. You can mention the numeration, but you can't measure a measurement. Skumekach means the price. So the first day, the Tanakhama believes you can't mention a measurement. Whereas Rav Shimon Elazar, man, says you can measure a measurement, you can't just mention a price. As long as you don't mention a price, you're okay. That's the way Rashi learns it. On the other hand, if you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, he says, Sku Minyan, Yomar lo, Yesh li Gimel Aguzin, Ten li Achshav Gimel Acherim, or Yesh li Chameya. That Sku Minyan doesn't mean that he has a gears of Sku Minyan, as being Sku Mida, and then Sku Mekach. Sku Mekach he reads the same way, which is, it's a monetary transaction. Because the Tanakhama says you can't say Sku Minyan, which means that if you say, I already have three, give me another three, and that's a total of six. That's what you can't do. So Tosafot favors the Girsa of the Rach because he says Rashi is his Pshita Dasur. Because the way Rashi has the Girsa, it's obvious why by Sku Mekach, if you're mentioning a price, that it's a sur. We had a lot of Mishnayot already mentioned that. Also, he says, according to Rashi, it should say Tainli Mida, not Sku Mida. So therefore, he favors the Girsa of the Rach, which is Sku Minyan and Sku Mekach. He says, that's the Girsa of the Tosefta and the Behag. And he says, this is the problem. You're not allowed to go in there and say, look, I already have three of this item. Give me another three. That's a total of six. You're also not allowed to go, Skum Mekach means you're not allowed to go in there and say, look, that's three for a dinar. Give me another three for a dinar. That's a total of two dinarim. So that's what you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to add up to come to a total amount, whether it's enumeration according to the Tanakhama or according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, it's not to come to a total bill. So that's what you're not allowed to do, because that is not so pshito. Because then you end up with a chiddush here, which is that you're not allowed to manage in the total pricing, but you can mention the individual pricing of the items. You can say, look, give me that with six, that for a dinar, give me that for a dinar. Just can't add it up to give a total bill, because then it's like mekach u'memkar. That means you are permitted to mention the prices of the items. According to Rashi, you can't even mention the prices of the items, but that's obvious, because that we learned from the other Mishnayot. The way the Rach has the girsa is a chiddush here, that you can mention the prices of the items, you just can't total them up to give you a total bill. All right, with that, the end of Perek. We'll just start the Mishnah for the beginning of the next Perek, and then we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow. Someone who is transporting barrels of wine on Yom Tov from place to place, he's not allowed to bring them in a large basket or a smaller basket. He can bring it on his shoulder or the fanav, or carrying it in front of himself. Someone who's bringing teven, who's bringing straw on Yom Tov, you shouldn't throw the basket that's carrying the straw to your back. You can carry it in your hands. Now, both of these are problems of, it looks like you're doing it either for large quantities or mekach u'memkar. When you're carrying a large number of barrels, it looks like you're going to sell them in the shuk, so we don't allow you to do this, because it looks like masechot, so you have to do them one at a time. Also with the tevin, when you throw it behind, it looks like you're taking it for a long trip, and you're going to take it out to the shuk. When you take it in front of you, it looks like you're bringing it in for your household use. So in all these cases, we make you do it in a manner that's less efficient, because that means you're using smaller quantities, and that's more for household use rather than the normal way you would do it on chol or commercial type quantities. You're allowed to start a pile of straw, which you've never used before, which technically is muksa, that you're allowed to start with and to use it for burning, cooking on Yom Tov, which makes it sound like there's no problem with muksa. On the other hand, etzim, wood that's in the muksa, and the muksa is the backyard where you don't go a lot because there's no separate entrance to the backyard except through the house. So it's less used. It's used for storage. So it's the wood house. You're not allowed to take wood out of the wood house where it was left, where you didn't intend to use it for Yom Tov unless you prepared it ahead of time. Makes it sound like muksa is a problem on Yom Tov. The Gemara asked the Stira and the Mishnah about this. Tosafot raises an issue that in the Gemara in Shabbat and Daf Kuf Vav, we have a Mishnah there that says on Shabbat, when you have to move the barrels of wine, that if you have to move barrels of wine, if you have to move straw, that you should do it in the largest quantity possible. You should take them all at once to be memayit behiluch, to take down the amount of trips that you have to make. So we favor you doing one big lifting and minimizing the trips rather than doing a small amount and doing multiple trips. Yet our Mishnah here does just the opposite, which is that here it tells you do more trips and don't carry large quantities. So Tosafot says, I don't understand. Why in Shabbat is it this way? In Yom Tov, it's different. So he says, that's exactly the reason. It's because it's Shabbat and Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, where Hotza'ah is mutar, then if you carry it, first of all, people are going to see you because you're going to carry it for longer distances. Plus, people might think you're taking it then to bring it to the shuk because it's going to be out in a public area and you're carrying large quantities. So therefore, we say to you, better to walk more times than to do it in large quantities, kamasechol. Other than in Shabbat, where Hotza'ah is not permitted. So wherever you're moving it is for very short distances or in confined areas where people can't see you. There, it's better to do the whole thing in one shot and be ma'it the hiluch and just do it in one shot. So because it's Shabbat, we say do less walking and do more carrying. And because it's Yom Tov, we should do less carrying and more walking, exactly for that reason, that on Yom Tov, the permissibility of carrying makes it a much more of a public issue and something that looks like Ovda Dechol, whereas on Shabbat, you never leave the house, you never leave the confines of the area that you're permitted to carry in, and therefore there's no question of Ovda Dechol. Okay, we'll stop over here.